FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It is July 10th, 2017. Trump just finished up his big international adventure. What happened there? Well, gold and silver getting slammed. What's going on there? Much more to discuss. Hey, don't forget, email kl@kerrylutz.com. We answer all. And with us for our Monday discussion is John Rubino. Find his work over at dollarcollapse.com. Hey, John, good morning. And you've been busy writing as usual.
Morning, Kerry. Yeah, I'm doing a big magazine article on top of the normal website and other stuff. So it's been a stressful week and one more to go and then I'll be done and summer life will be back to normal.
Yeah, well, we live for summers, right? We definitely
do. Out here in Idaho, they're short, but they're great. So you got to take advantage of the, 80 degree and clear sky weather when it's here.
Yes. Yes, you do. Hey, so what pray tell is going on here first with gold and silver and this latest smackdown?
Well, if you look at the Commitment of Traders report, which is, I'm not normally a technician, and I don't think a lot of technical analysis is necessarily valid, but this indicator just seems to work over and over again. It's an indicator that tracks what the speculators and the other big players are doing in the paper gold and silver markets. In other words, what people are doing with futures contracts. And when the speculators are overexcited or terrified, that as it is expressed in what they're doing with futures contracts, that usually marks a turning point. And lately, the speculators have been getting more and more nervous as silver and gold have been going down. And they're reaching a point in their portfolios that is normally associated with the bottom in gold and silver. In other words, all the emotional money has been flushed out of precious metals. Mm-hmm. And it's time for the unemotional money. In other words, the guys who buy gold and silver for fabrication or other industrial uses, who would like to buy it cheaply, but have to buy it regardless. It's time for them to start buying aggressively again and pushing the market back up. So it's a pretty good bet that the bottom is, if not in, it close for gold and silver, and that we'll start to see seasonal factors dominating paper factors going forward. In other words, starting in August, it's usually pretty favorable for gold and silver through February, because that's when there is a lot of buying activity around the world. In India, marriage season, and in the U.S. after January 1st, you get a lot of people buying for tax reasons and other reasons. And that tends to lead to upward pressure on gold and silver prices. So we're entering that period again, which means, some of these beaten down mining stocks are probably good 3 to 6 month speculations now. You can buy them and figure you've got the wind at your back in the underlying metals, and that should be good for some of these volatile miners. So based on history, this isn't a bad time to start adding to your mining portfolio.
Mm-hmm. So you think we're getting close to the bottom here, right?
Well, based on that one indicator, which has worked over and over again for the past decade, yeah, sometime soon, if not today, we'll see a bottom in gold and silver. And we'll see the precious metal stocks, which are a lot more volatile than the metals, start to really gap up. So it could be maybe not something as extreme as early 2016, when a lot of the little junior miners quintupled. that was an amazingly short, sharp run for those guys. I wouldn't expect to see something like that again, just because the imbalances aren't quite as extreme. But a lot of them have fallen from their 2016 highs pretty dramatically, which means they've got a lot of ground to make back up. So I think we'll see some doubles and triples among the junior miners. But, when you're talking about junior miners, you always have to stress that you got to stick with quality in that sector, because there are a lot of, as Mark Twain said when he was defining a gold mine as a hole in the ground with a liar standing next to it. There's a lot of that out there, and you have to be really careful to buy companies that have seasons management and that have the backing of one of the the legitimate analysts in that market, you know, Rick Rule, Jay Taylor, somebody like that.
Absolutely.
When those guys are on board, that's a pretty safe bet that you're talking about a quality junior miner and one that will do well, not just in a, you know, a short-term pop in gold and silver, but longer term.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. If you don't, you know, I for years and years and years have read public statements of companies, you know, all their stuff, right? Whatever it might be, their 10Ks, their 10Qs, you know, the actual annual report of the company. And one thing I've learned is that there is no way to tell from those public statements unless you are really somebody who, you know, who really does this like all the time. And even then, it's so easy to get burned here. And that's the problem. That's why you need to go to people like you were talking about to help help you clarify and understand what it is you're looking at.
Yeah. Rick Rule makes a really good point about the junior miners when he says that as a group, it's a negative cash flow business. In other words, yes, if you lump all the junior miners together, they're going to lose a few billion dollars a year. And so all the profit that is made and investing in that sector is made within the top 10% of the companies, you know, the small group of high quality, legitimate junior miners. And so if you want to make money in the sector, you got to find that 10% and you got to stay there and avoid the 90% that are hemorrhaging cash and are going to go out of business in the next few years. Mm-hmm. And for the average person, that's not easy. So right, you really do need good advice from trustworthy sources. And luckily, there are some of those out there. You know, there are some established people in the mining industry who have a great track record of picking winners. And the way I decide what to buy, basically, is by listening to those guys. You know, I just look at Jay Taylor's newsletter, or I'll listen to a Rick Rule interview. And when he names his favorite stocks, then they go on my list. And they're the ones that when there's new cash coming in for me to play with, that I go back to and buy some of. And that's not a perfect system because they're not always right. But it's a lot better than me just trying to figure out these guys on, you know, these little junior miners on my own and decide whether they're lying or not based on, as you said, these really glowing reports that they put out from these supposedly legitimate geologists who are judging how much gold and silver they've got in the ground. Go back through history of the mining sector and you see a lot of reports like, oh, sorry, yeah, we told you we had 10 million ounces of gold. Oops. Well, actually, it's 100,000 ounces. Sorry about that. You know, you see a lot of that stuff.
And one of the main things, you know, of course, you know, you do this stuff pretty much for a living, is infrastructure. There are some incredible, incredible projects, as our friends from the North would call them, in Canada, that really... they just have unbelievable ore grade and so much in reserves. The only thing is that they're landlocked and there's no possible way to get to them. You can't mine them. They're impossible to mine. And yet, man, I'll tell you, the initial drilling cores look unbelievable, right? You got to get there. And then you find out that, you really don't have a deposit that can be mined here, right?
Yeah, oh, that's absolutely right. You know, you've got this beautiful, well-established deposit, but it's going to cost you $1 billion to get it anywhere that it can be turned into real, you know, marketable gold. And so, and maybe it's in a place where there's political instability or where it's only warm enough to do any actual work on it for 3 months a year. You know, there are a lot of other things besides the quality of the deposit that have to be taken into account. And miners, when they're raising money, don't always tell you this stuff.
In fact, they might just forget to tell you a lot of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you really need somebody who's been there and mm-hmm. seen it all and yes. who knows what questions to ask and who knows who to trust out there, because the average person cannot know those things. It's like investing in tech stocks or something. Same thing. I mean, how do you know which solar panel maker is going to be the one that ends up dominating the next 10 years and turning into the Amazon of the industry or whatever? You can't know that ahead of time.
No.
Because you don't understand the technology and the other things that go into a fast-growing, volatile market like solar power or biotech or anything like that. There are all these industries out there that are going to be phenomenal, that are going to change the world, and that are going to spawn some of the great growth stocks of the next 50 years. Yet, the average person has no way of figuring out which one is going to be the Amazon or the Tesla or the Apple of that industry, and which one is going to be Pets.com or Stamps.com or whatever, and is just going to cease to exist. So we have to rely on expert help.
Pets.com doesn't exist anymore? Oh my goodness gracious. How could that be?
It was such a great sounding idea. Whatever it was.
I stock in them at one time. I probably did. You know, I always give the caveat, John, if you listen to me, you are going to lose money, at least in the short term, right?
Yeah, you know, same here with short-term trading. I'm the absolute worst with market timing.
Yeah.
And which means that that I have to be right every single time on the long-term trends because I'm going to lose money going in and out of the short term. Let's see. I just looked up pets.com and there is no such thing now. Yeah. So it is gone. Now there's petsmart.com.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole different company, PetSmart. You know, I mean, it's they actually have brick and mortar stores, at least for now. How long this will last, I don't know the answer to that one. But for right now, they've got they do exist. So, and of course, you can always buy anything for your pet on Amazon, which is probably the problem why most of them aren't around anymore.
That is the problem, you know. Yeah. Grocery store chains, clothing chains, videos, you know, video anything is all being eaten up by Amazon Prime. Yes. There was just a thing in the Wall Street Journal today about how Amazon Prime subscribers are now about equal to the total number of cable TV subscribers out there. Right. And that includes all the different cable companies lumped together.
I know.
So this is an immense system that Amazon is building up, and it threatens everything else.
It really does.
Yeah, and that's kind of a departure from gold and silver miners, because I don't think Amazon's threatening them yet. Well, but who knows going forward?
Yeah, well, they're much better at acting as an intermediary than they are as actually going into the ground. But, you know, they're producing fine Hollywood content now. We don't get into movie reviews much, but there's a series on Amazon Prime called Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton, and it's excellent. And then there's the successor show to the BBC show of Top Gear. If you're a car person, it's called Grand Tour. And they're putting so much money into it. Like BBC used to put in $500,000 an episode. They're putting in $5 million an episode. So this is what the world is like now and why it's so much different. And you can't really know what's going to be. It's so hard, which is why you almost have to go for experts to help you figure things out.
Gary, this is also part of the reason that hedge funds are having so much trouble. They're not beating the market anymore, and they charge extremely high fees on the premise that they're the smartest guys in the world and that they will beat the market for you. They can't do that anymore. And part of that is because monetary policy is now so crazy. You know, we're flooding the global economy with so much free cash that it's distorting old market relationships, which a lot of black box trading systems for hedge funds are based on. So these guys can't make any more money. But a big part of it is also the transition in technology, where software, as Mark Andreessen says, is eating the world. Which means a lot of your old stock picks, a lot of rock solid looking real brick and mortar or, you know, other kinds of real world companies are losing out to entities like Amazon and Netflix and Facebook in ways that are kind of hard to predict. So if you're a hedge fund guy, you're kind of left with a choice of buying big tech, you know, buying the handful of FANG stocks, as they call them, that are eating everybody else, and risking a lot of money on that prospect because you're buying that have been incredibly high multiples of today's earnings, or sticking with, you know, the regular companies that are competing with the FANG stocks and take the risk that they're just going to be extinguished by competition from, you know, Google's new whatever, you know, and that doesn't leave you with an awful lot of options if you're running a big chunk of money that requires that you beat the market for you to earn your really high fees. And because it's becoming harder and harder, a lot of hedge funds are running into real trouble. You're seeing a lot of big name hedge funds just close up shop and give back the money to their investors because they just can't understand this market. And that is also a sign that we're near a top in the cycle. Because historically, you go back and look at the end of previous cycles, and you see a lot of high powered guys giving back money to their clients because they don't understand the market anymore. They don't see sufficient opportunities to invest that much money. Warren Buffett did it way back in the 1960s, I think. He just closed up shop for a while and then got back in when things looked like they were more understandable again. So you're seeing some of that go on too. And that's one more data point that points towards an imminent top in this cycle. When that happens is impossible to predict, but it sure does feel like, based on a lot of different indicators, that we're getting close.
Yeah, it certainly feels like it. And of course, the old saying, the market can remain irrational far longer than you can remain solvent, right?
Well, that's already happened for a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, based on historical indicators, we should have been shorting this market in 2012.
Yeah.
And yet it's doubled since then, or at least most major indexes have doubled. Some of the big tech stocks that we talked about have quintupled.
Yeah. And look at Google, look at Apple, look at Facebook. Yeah. Hey, by the way, while we're on this topic, I mean, it's not really a topic, but the fake news, it turns out, surprise, surprise, that apparently is a lot easier to manipulate ratings than one ever thought possible, John. So they say, oh, we're getting record viewership. Well, it's harder to do that in cable because you get it through a cable company and they have the ability to track all usage on their box. You know, it's two ways. It didn't used to be two ways. It used to be you just got stuff and then they didn't know. But now they can track your viewing habits, right? And that's... But on cable, they have to stay honest, but regular prime time, like the networks, they don't. And it's really interesting. And the same with Facebook and other advertising online. The fact of the matter is that it's real easy to fudge the analytics, as they call it. And that's also another indication that that the end is nigh.
Well, yeah. Most of the data that you just mentioned there is generated internally by these companies. So, of course, they can change the algorithms that they use to get more favorable results for their stock price. And, the amount of money that's at stake puts a lot of pressure on these guys to do that. Yes. But I don't think there was ever a really good way to tell who was watching what from the point of view of an investor who doesn't have access to the internal models that generate those numbers. Because before we had the stuff that we're talking about now, there was the Nielsen rating service, yeah, where you had people who were kind of self-reporting, telling you what they were watching on TV, which means they're probably telling you they're watching, PBS a lot more often than Real Housewives of Los Angeles or something. So you couldn't really trust those numbers either. Mm-hmm. So we're in a way kind of flying blind. But
yeah, for sure.
You also kind of know, just based on the culture, what's hot and what's not. I mean, Game of Thrones is a really popular show, even if the numbers coming out of HBO aren't necessarily trustworthy all the time, because they get to determine what the numbers are. You still know it's really popular, and you still know it's generating a lot of subscribers for HBO. So we kind of sort of know what's what, but the real numbers, as with any other industry, the real numbers are in a lot of cases made up. Chris Martinson just did a piece about a pesticide that's really popular around the world until it was just banned in Europe here, where the original studies coming out of the pesticide industry were fairly favorable for it. It made it look benign. And then they did more studies and more studies and more studies and finally found out it's the thing killing off all the bees, But right. For a long time there, the stats coming out of the industry made it look a lot less harmful than it actually is. It took a really long time to come to that conclusion. And I think that's true pretty much everywhere. You know, if you look at any industry that gets to self-report, they're lying to us. And that's just the nature of the game. You know, for markets to work, you need good information at the consumer level. In other words, we need to know what we're buying. Right. And to the extent that we don't have that, markets don't work. So we're kind of a mix right now out there of markets that work beautifully, where there's excellent information and people are able to choose based on that information. And then a lot of markets where the information is really murky, or the companies have captured the regulatory infrastructure and get to do what they want, or they're paying, you know, Harvard researchers to come up with favorable data. And so then we don't know for sure. Like the opioid issue is another one like that, where the companies making these incredibly dangerous, deadly, addictive drugs are saying, oh, they're not dangerous or addictive. Don't worry. You know, we're taking care of it. And they're lying and they're getting away with it because the regulators are more or less owned by Big Pharma. You know, stuff like that is really infuriating, because in a way it's not just a crime against the customers or the environment when people do stuff like this. It's a crime against capitalism itself. You know, it means markets don't work, and markets are discredited when segments of big industries are able to lie to us with impunity. And yeah, I really do think there should be a separate category of, you know, criminal penalty for something that's a crime against a system that we value. You know, it's like a hate crime, where you didn't just commit violence against one person, you committed violence against an entire group. Well, we've defined that as a separate, more serious category of crime. We should have crimes against capitalism that are punishable really seriously.
Like that. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a crime against nature, and they do it all the time. You know, it's not like this stuff never happens, John. It happens all the time.
Oh my God. You go back through corporate history and you see stuff. Go look at what General Motors used to do.
What they did recently, you know, what they did recently.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, they way back when used to go in and buy up the trolley systems of cities and then close them down so everybody had to buy cars, you know, stuff like that. It might not be criminal, but there should be some kind of a punishment for doing stuff like that. And you know, any major industry right now is incented to do things like that to protect itself. So you really have to have, I think that one of the keys to a truly libertarian future is paradoxically some kind of really clear, really effective regulation of truth telling. You know, you've got to give your market, your customers, accurate information to be a true participant in a free market. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, you're committing a crime not just against your customers, but, you know, against the system as a whole, against the wealth creation process that we need in order to finance all the stuff that we think we need to do. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's also that the system has to rely upon trust, right?
And you don't have that if people are lying
and
to you.
You lose it.
And you only need a few people to lie to you to destroy trust across the system.
Yes. Yeah, very true. And yeah, so once the trust is gone, you know, it's kind of it. So.
Well, that's the death of what we think of as the American system of private property and relatively free markets and individual initiative. You know, once you reach a point where nobody trusts the companies in the private sector anymore, then the only alternative is to expand the government to protect us all. And then we end up with an economic dictatorship, which is what we're headed for.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. You know, the last 30 years, we've been taking continuous steps in that direction. And which is one of the reasons why the economy doesn't work for most people anymore. You know, you've got the government stifling free markets, and you've got the big corporations that are kind of partners with the government doing the same thing. So,
yes,
which is why you get elections going the way that they go.
Yeah. Hey. Well, we could talk about this for days, because it's really been evolving. It's a perversion of the system, and just so many bad things come from it. And really, you know, the government was supposed to, one of the limited functions of the government when it was created, you know, was actually to protect the free market, right? I mean, that was its purpose, to protect the integrity of the free market. In other words, stop fraud from taking place. And yet now the government seems to be an aider and an abettor of all that. So anyways, we got interesting things coming up. Gold, silver looks like it's hit the bottom, or will be very, very shortly. I agree with that. And hey, we got your article, your upcoming article that I hope you will share with us when it is completed, and we'll shoot out the link to all of you out there. Hey, check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Sign up for ours at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Email again, kl@carrielutz.com. And the Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And John, hey, don't work too hard. It is summer after all. You're supposed to be taking it easy, you know. And we will catch up with you next week.
Okay, Carrie. Talk to you then.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.